This is the story of an elaborate fraud, a set of criminal financial schemes that, with a resulting loss of over $35 million, caused enormous monetary impact on many individuals and businesses. It had a social impact, with many people losing faith in their fellow humans and in the systems that we have set up to protect people. And perhaps most significant was the psychological impact, with individuals suffering from depression, isolation from friends and families, difficulty concentrating, focusing on normal tasks, a feeling of helplessness and hopelessness, diminished self-image and self-perception, shifting to frustration, anger, and even mortification. The evidence suggests that it also resulted in at least one person's early death. The ringleader and principal perpetrator of the fraud was described by one victim as, quote, a financial psychopath, a merciless wrecking ball that leaves a wake of human pain in his path wherever he goes and whatever he does, unquote. He is, according to another victim, quote, an unrepentant criminal danger to society, unquote, around whom, quote, the threat of violence was and still is always there, unquote. From the True Suspense podcast, this is Season 6, The Great Deceiver. Here is Episode 1, Gone to Pot. Prologue. The Salish Lodge and Spa, overlooking 270-foot Snoqualmie Falls in the state of Washington, was originally constructed in 1916 as a rest stop and eight-room inn for travelers crossing over a pass in the Cascade Mountains about half-hour outside of Seattle. In 1988, the lodge reopened as a luxury hotel and restaurant, and 30 years later, in 2018, it underwent a multi-million-dollar renovation that included the opening of its spa. Fans of the David Lynch TV mystery drama Twin Peaks from the early 1990s would recognize the lodge and Snoqualmie Falls. The falls appeared in the opening credits of every episode. And the fictional Great Northern Hotel in Twin Peaks, which served as the home base for FBI agent Dale Cooper for the entire series, was depicted by the exterior of the Salish Lodge. The lodge's own website calls it, quote, the perfect escape from the everyday, with soothing services, refined accommodations, and a magnificent backdrop. Unquote. I'll read further from the lodge's promotional materials to give you an idea of the setting. Quote, each one of our 86 guest rooms is a luxury retreat of its own. It's the perfect place to create an incredible romantic getaway or to relax after spending the day hiking the local trails. The spa at Salish Lodge specializes in Northwest-inspired treatments featuring herbs from our garden and honey from our on-site apiary. Our two restaurants bring you mouth-watering Pacific Northwest cuisine. Unquote. At nighttime on Sunday, September 15, 2019, local police received a phone call regarding a drunken disturbance at the Salish Lodge property, not the kind of thing one would associate with this soothing, refined, luxury relaxation retreat. A worker at the location told of a man being, quote, disruptive and verbal, unquote, with employees of the lodge and threatening a valet attendant who was parking cars. When police arrived, employees told them that the man had been screaming profanities, threatened a woman, and grabbed the valet, telling him that, quote, I'm going to send my boys after you, unquote. As police approached the man, they found he was highly belligerent, telling one of the officers, quote, "You messed with the wrong dude," unquote. Another officer later reported that the man had come towards him with clenched fists and in an aggressive manner that suggested he would, quote, "cause harm to myself or another member of the group behind me," unquote. The officer said he had to repeatedly threaten to use his taser on the man, commanding him to stop, but the man did not do so until he was around 10 feet away, at which point he finally dropped to the ground. The arresting officer described the man as appearing impaired, although police could not detect any alcohol. Even after he was handcuffed, the man continued to curse and threaten the police. He explained that he was very important and threatened to sue the arresting officer. He repeatedly asked the officer where he lived, telling him, "I'm going to find out who you are." According to the officer, the man also said, quote, "You should be very scared of me," unquote, and, quote, "I'm going to civilly hit you in the fucking ass. This is going to cost you, brother, a lot of money," unquote. The man was read his Miranda rights, during which he asked one of the officers, quote, "Do you know who I am, bitch? Google me, motherfucker," unquote. While being transported in the back of a police car, the man yelled, quote, "Bro, take these handcuffs off so I can kick your ass. I'm gonna own you, motherfucker," unquote. When they arrived for booking, the man refused to leave the car, and officers had to physically move him to the booking area, during which he again threatened a lawsuit. The man was diverted from a city jail to the county jail, where he was booked on a felony count of intimidating a public servant. As a side note, unrelated to the incident I just described, only a month and a half later, at the start of November 2019, the Snoqualmie Indian tribe announced that it had acquired the Salish Lodge and Spa along with adjacent acreage. This marked what the tribe viewed as a hard-fought victory in its long pursuit to reclaim what it considered to be sacred land. James and Brenda Meckley were a married couple who lived near Seattle, Washington. Jim was a retired businessman, and Brenda, a cancer survivor, was a real estate broker. The Meckleys had done rather well for themselves financially and had considerable savings. They were big into charity, especially for children and veterans. The couple was looking for new investment opportunities and had taken considerable interest in the cannabis industry. In 2012, Washington and Colorado had become the first two states in the U.S. where voters passed initiatives legalizing the sale of marijuana for recreational use. It took time to implement the regulations, but by July of 2014, the first retail stores selling recreational pot opened to the public. The Washington State Liquor Control Board became the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board and was given responsibility for the regulation of retail sales of marijuana. By the very next year, 2015, sales of recreational pot had reached almost $500 million in the state. By 2018, total sales had climbed past a full $1 billion. But in many ways, it still was an infant industry, and Jim and Brenda Meckley saw a huge upside potential in the legal marijuana business at that time. However, they had very little experience with investing and had never even bought individual stocks. Jeanette Igtenlock, a good friend of the Meckleys who knew of their interest, introduced them to a personal friend and romantic interest of hers, a man named Justin Costello, an enormously wealthy hedge fund operator with considerable investment and financial expertise in the burgeoning cannabis industry, and with whom her own family had invested. The Meckleys invited him over for dinner in January of 2019. Justin Costello was a 39-year-old man with an amazing background. Jim and Brenda found him to be utterly charming and larger than life, a man from a working-class background who served his country and became a huge success. Costello had been wounded twice while serving in special forces in Iraq and still carries shrapnel in his leg. Subsequently, after graduating from the University of Minnesota and then acquiring a master's in business administration from Harvard, he went to work for Halliburton, the giant American multinational corporation that Dick Cheney had once run. At Halliburton, he was sent to Iraq, and he rose quickly. At one point, after escorting his boss to a helicopter, the chopper was hit by a rocket-propelled grenade, and his boss was killed when the helicopter exploded. This catapulted Justin Costello to responsibility of overseeing hundreds of millions of dollars of expenditures in Halliburton's various war rebuilding contracts in Iraq, reporting directly to Cheney. After Halliburton, he ended up on Wall Street for over a decade and accumulated greater wealth. Unfortunately, as Justin explained to Jim and Brenda over dinner, this came to an end when the company he worked for was brought down by wildly risky investments on the part of a key player in a different division. Justin did, however, learn some major lessons and had become a very cautious investor, though still eager to leverage major opportunities. By the time the Meckleys met Justin, he had established himself in the cannabis industry and owned several companies involved with marijuana, hemp, and cannabidiol, or CBD. Now, just to clarify, Delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, known as THC, is the main psychoactive ingredient in the cannabis plant. It's what brings about the high when smoking marijuana or eating an edible. CBD, also made from the cannabis plant, is related to THC, but it's not psychoactive, so it doesn't cause the high that THC does. CBD is sold in various forms, including oils, extracts, vapes, and topical lotions as a potential treatment for a variety of conditions, including arthritis, insomnia, and anxiety, but was not regulated by the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board. Anyway, Justin Costello's companies were involved in the full range of legalized products of the cannabis plant. Justin was also a registered investment advisor and was managing money for other high net worth individuals, including a Saudi oil sheikh who entrusted him with approving expenditures for the prince's children and family. Justin Costello was on the verge of becoming a billionaire and was soon going to be featured in a cover story in Forbes magazine. Jim and Brenda learned a great deal in the course of their lovely evening with Justin, and felt fortunate to have met him. When they parted, the couple told him they hoped to keep in touch, and Justin said they should feel free to contact him if they had any more questions about potential investments. The Meckleys did keep in touch with Justin Costello, whom they saw on several further occasions over the ensuing months, and they discussed various investment strategies. they became aware through the media that Justin himself was a major contributor to charity in the area. Jim and Brenda felt they had found someone they could trust and thanked their friend for introducing them to Justin. Also during these months, Justin expressed interest in purchasing a multi-million-dollar home, working with Brenda as his realtor, and she showed him one that she thought he might find particularly appealing. A key strategy that Justin shared with the couple was a plan to use one of his companies, called GRN Holding, to acquire multiple businesses in the pot, hemp, and CBD arenas, and make it a conglomerate that would lead the industry, starting with the state of Washington. He also explained that one of his companies, Seed Science CBD, had the only laboratory that was operating to the standards of the Food and Drug Administration, and this could become a major asset to the conglomerate. The Meckleys had learned that, although marijuana had become a billion-dollar business in the state of Washington, individual retailers lacked many of the resources needed to go to the next level. They tended to be smaller companies who had to struggle with regulations and were hampered by another factor. Marijuana businesses around the country have been burdened with the problem of how to handle their money. The big banks and issuers of credit cards generally won't do business with them because, despite legalization in many states, selling marijuana still violates federal law, so handling the proceeds of marijuana transactions is fraught with potential civil and criminal liability. Costello had found ways to deal with some of the obstacles, and owned and operated a separate company that provided banking services to marijuana businesses in Washington, Colorado, California, Illinois, and Alaska. His concept now was that by putting together a conglomerate, they could achieve economies of scale and eventually become an extremely valuable corporation that could be sold for a monumental profit. Jim and Brenda decided that Justin's plan made sense, and they decided to invest when Justin offered them the opportunity. On June 12, 2019, about 6 months after their initial dinner gathering, Justin sold the couple 500,000 shares of GRN Holding. At the time, it was selling at 1/2 cent, so their total investment amounted to $250,000. Justin also offered to develop a diverse financial portfolio for Jim and Brenda and handle all their investments. They readily agreed to have him manage a large portion of their savings. Justin arranged for the couple to set up a brokerage account with TD Ameritrade and give him access to it. They executed an agreement whereby Jim and Brenda would pay Justin 20% of the net profits he would generate. This represented a so-called friends and family discount over his typical charges, and Justin also agreed to waive his standard upfront investment fee, which would have been considerable. A few days after investing in GRN Holding, the Meckleys deposited $4 million in their new TD Ameritrade account and provided Justin with full access. He also had the couple sign a trading authorization form documenting their authorization for Justin to buy and sell securities in their brokerage account. 5 days after that, in a separate transaction, Justin sold Jim and Brenda 9 million common shares of a company called Discovery Gold Corporation at a cost of $1.8 million. Discovery Gold was a penny stock mining company that Justin had invested in with Prospect Digs in the nation of Ghana, but the goal was to fold it into GRN Holding as part of the plan for building the cannabis conglomerate. Technically, the Meckleys purchased the Discovery Gold shares from GRN Funds, a private equity and hedge fund owned by Justin. It is a little confusing that GRN Funds and GRN Holding were two different companies, but they serve different purposes, as Justin explained it, one brokering deals and the other holding different companies as assets. Jim and Brenda were very excited about their new investments and about having such a successful financial whiz handling so much of their portfolio. They were building wealth and a financially secure future for their senior years and for their children as their eventual heirs. There was only one problem with the couple's new financial path. To understand it, we need to briefly turn the clock back to the year 1999 and the graduating class of Oconomowoc High School in Wisconsin. In the high school yearbook, each graduating senior was permitted to have placed under their photograph a brief sentence or two by which they wanted to be remembered. One of the seniors had this printed underneath his photos, quote, "It's easy to be someone you're not, but hard to be yourself," unquote. The student's name was Justin Costello. By the time the Meckleys met Justin, you see, he had become expert in being someone he was not. Put another way, it would emerge that Justin had never served in the military, much less been wounded in battle. He had not graduated from the University of Minnesota and never attended Harvard Business School. Justin had never worked for Halliburton in Iraq or anywhere else, had never operated a hedge fund, was never licensed to manage money or investments, and had never spent years building financial acumen on Wall Street. He was no billionaire and did not know any Saudi sheikhs, nor was it ever planned for him to appear in a cover story in Forbes or any other magazine. Jim and Brenda Meckley had placed many millions of dollars, a substantial part of their life savings, in the hands of a con man. And as it turns out, they were far from alone. Although born in Rockford, Illinois, Justin grew up in the town of Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, about 35 miles from Milwaukee. After graduating from Oconomowoc High School, Justin attended not the University of Minnesota, but Winona State University in Minnesota, and majored in political science and administration. In 2002, while still at Winona State, Justin tried his hand at politics. He ran for the Minnesota House of Representatives at the age of only 22. In his campaign, Justin said his top priority was to bring more commerce to southeastern Minnesota, and he promised to expand tourism around the town of Winona and protect business owners against tax increases. He also promised to work to keep tuition low for higher education institutions and seek equitable funding for rural Minnesota school districts. He said he knew that some of his friends could not attend Winona State because child care funding had been cut, and so he promised to, quote, "find the money and fix the child care program," unquote. In addition, he promised to, quote, "revitalize farming in southeastern Minnesota and protect farmers and agribusiness," quote, "on all levels," unquote. Justin implored voters to, quote, "give me a chance, I won't do you wrong," unquote. When the election came around, as it turned out, he was trounced by his opponent, who picked up 65% of the vote. Justin, however, was able to garner over 4,000 votes, but apparently that was not enough to sustain his interest in being a politician. It is not clear how Justin Costello supported himself after graduating from Winona State, but we know that over 30 companies were identified as set up between 2003 and 2020 with Justin Costello as a registered agent or business contact. Later on, he registered himself as vice president, president, or CEO. Most of these companies lasted around 2 to 4 years. We also know that at some point he relocated to the state of Washington, starting with the town of Spokane. It's difficult to pinpoint exactly when Justin Costello first began his crime spree, but by 2017 he owned a company called Pacific Banking Corp., the financial institution through which he was providing banking services to marijuana retailers in multiple states. In reality, Justin Costello sent false account statements to the marijuana businesses so that they were given to understand that their money was secure when it was anything but. It appears that at least by 2017 and the following couple of years, Justin hatched a very elaborate set of plans to defraud a variety of individuals and businesses. Along with Jim and Brenda Meckley, he left a trail of victims. Still, it would take quite some time before Justin Costello's crimes would even appear on the radar screen of the authorities. His first major brush with law enforcement was when he was arrested for creating a disturbance and threatening police at the Salish Lodge and Spa. Even then, police were unaware of his far more sinister activity, and he got off with the equivalent of a slap on the wrist. Join us next week when we learn more about how Justin Costello established a name for himself in the cannabis industry of Washington State, and the tangled web he managed to weave in Episode 2 of The Great Deceiver. Big Plans, Big Promises. The Great Deceiver is a production of True Suspense Podcasts, written and narrated by me, Arthur Perlstein. Music, sound engineering, and post-production by Guy Bainbridge and Walls End Studios. Be sure to visit truesuspense.com for more information about this podcast and other True Suspense productions. If you like what you hear, please help spread the word. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us wherever you listen to the podcast. It helps new listeners find us. Thank you.